Müller House Meeting, Friday morning, 24th September, 1976. About three generations ago, a man of vision who had established himself in another part of this country, and finding that he needed a place where his work could expand more because of the demand from people, walked into this valley of peace and beauty. And when he arrived here, he knew that this was the right place for him and his work. That man was Johannes Müller. And it is to him that it is right and proper that we must start our meetings by offering our thanks and tribute for what he had done. He was truly a man of religion, a man who had the vision of the reality of communion with one of the greatest teachers humanity has known. Not only to him do we owe thanks, but also to his children who have continued his work, and without whose gracious permission and unremitting help, we could not be meeting here today. So to them also, deep thankfulness. What brings us together here? Is it that we look for a holiday, for pleasure, for the improvement of our health? Is it because we treat this place as somewhere we could retreat to run away from the problems and the pressures of modern life in the world? If it is all these things, we are seeking something just for ourselves. And in that state, it is totally impossible even to touch the fringe of the reality of communion, of living in communion. Or is it that we come to find inspiration from the beauty of nature, to find new ideas, something to stimulate us, and so forth? Something where we might perhaps, as we imagine and believe, just have a glimpse of a vision of transcendence, which is the ultimate reality out of which we all emerge. All that may sound idealistic, but it is still self-centered. We are concerned with ourselves. We want something. I want this. I look forward to that, and so forth. And if I don't find what I have preconceived I want to find, there is disappointment, there is criticism, there is the state, which is the very opposite of communion. We have met here together in order that something of this tremendous reality, this extraordinary thing which few people ever touch, namely living in communion, can be realized. Let us emphasize the living in communion. Being in communion. Not just talking about it, not just thinking about it, wishing for it, not discussing it only, arguing about it, but actually living in communion, living in the whole sense, not only with our whole bodies, with our whole minds and hearts, but with an awakened sense of that transcendent reality, which is this whole universe in manifestation. Now you see, this is the important point. What is the meaning of communion? We know this much, that we live in a universe made up of an infinite number of things as we see them, an infinitely large number of things, but they are all interrelated with each other, and they all interact with each other. We see, and the more intelligent and the more perceptive see a little more than the others, we see only a fragment, a tiny fragment of this interaction and interrelationship. And we who see that much have not yet enough sensitivity to be able to be completely in line with what little we do see and do feel and understand. So, if we appreciate that point, we can approach our topic, our subject, with the right kind of reverence for life. Reverence for the whole, humility within ourselves, humility which is not the opposite of pride, not only the opposite of pride, but something which is so complete and so wonderful that there is nothing of self-centeredness, selfishness, or egoism left in us. It is not that we have destroyed these qualities. It's not that. It is that we have become completely free of these qualities. For what is the meaning of any quality, good or bad? Any quality, good or bad, as we call it, is our way of talking of the manner in which our life energy expresses itself. If our life energy, mentally, emotionally, physically, expresses itself in a disharmonious, destructive form, we call it a vice, we call it evil, and so forth. If it expresses itself in a harmonious form, in a form which doesn't harm our environment or ourselves, we call it a virtue. We call it good. But true humility, like true love or wisdom or goodness, utterly transcends these opposites. Now, It is this kind of transcendence which, coming to life in us, means, to use the ordinary expression, we are living in communion. This is the meaning of communion. But I want to put something else before you also. It is not we who are living in communion, even then. It is the whole transcendence, God, if you like to use that word, or Eckhart's Gottheit, if you like it, you see. It is that which is demonstrating the reality of communion through you, through me. It is not I who do anything, it is not you who do anything. It is that wonderful totality in which you and I are completely contained, completely held. It is that totality which is demonstrating communion. And in demonstrating this communion through you, through me, it is showing the true meaning of what it is to be a human being. It shows us what our true destiny is and true fulfillment is. You'll see at once, it is nothing which you or I desire. It is nothing which you or I, by the exercise of mere intellect, can formulate in thought and speech. It leaves thought and speech and intellect and emotion and our ordinary aspirations completely behind. It is transcendent in the supremely transcendent sense of the word. Something which you and I don't know. And you see, in that not knowing is our happiness, our fulfillment, our true growth, our real flowering. So long as we try to come to fulfillment in accord with what our intellect perceives or our heart desires, we are not growing as the flower grows. Look how the flower unfolds itself. Does it know what its fulfillment is? It doesn't know anything at all. And that is why it is so utterly happy, so utterly giving. Not that the flower says, I've got to be beautiful and spread a perfume around me for the delight of other people. Not at all. The flower doesn't know that you or I exist at all. It just grows. It just comes to flowering, as we say. Now the difference between the flower or the ordinary animal and ourselves is that we are conscious creatures. The flower never knows when it has flowered. It will never know that it will now gradually die, that the petals will fall off, it will have fulfilled itself. It doesn't know what it means to have been born, to flower, and to die. But you and I know that. This is one difference. The flower can't look inside itself. The flower remains untouched by desire and by thought. But you and I are creatures of desire and thought. And we can look within ourselves, and this is where our special distinctiveness comes in. We are self-conscious, and we can look within, abstract ourselves as an entity, which is the unfortunate thing we do, and separate ourselves from the rest of the world. In this conscious, intellectual separating of ourselves from the rest of the world is the loss of communion. Remember how in Genesis, when the Lord God is walking in the cool of the evening in the garden, he asks Adam, after he has eaten the fruit of the tree, "Adam, where art thou?" Why does God need to ask Adam, "Where art thou?" God is the all-seeing. He can see at once. Why does he ask, "Adam, where art thou?" But in those words is hidden a wonderful secret. It is man himself, you yourself, I myself, who, in the cool of the evening, the cool, the quiet state, become aware, become conscious of the fact that I am no longer in communion. You see, I have lost that state of unity with the ultimate reality, with the wholeness, with the holiness, and I am now degraded. That is what it really means. So now you and I have this capacity of separating ourselves. And therefore our task is to awaken to the fact of what we actually are. We have run away from home. We have forgotten our father and mother. We have turned against our brothers and sisters. Isn't this the actual state of the world? Today, perhaps more poignantly than yesterday. This is what we have done. And so, we have to awaken, bring back to mind our relationship with the totality. That we are contained within this totality absolutely and totally. Now, when one awakens in this manner, then one doesn't ask oneself, now I'm not putting it in the terms of God asking Adam, but of ourselves asking ourselves. We don't have to ask ourselves, "Where am I?" You see why? Because this separatively self-conscious I is free of its prison house of separativeness. It is once again completely one with the totality, but it knows that it is one with the totality. And this is where you and I are different from the flower. We are human flowers. We talk of our own human flowering. Now I mention these things, I'm sure you all know them already, all these things. But I mention these things because many human beings through the ages have been aware of the fact that all is not well with them, with mankind. And they have sought to bring back this state of communion, this state of wholeness, health, holiness, call it what you like, by various methods, by various means of achieving a result. Now you see the fundamental mistake there. If I choose a method to bring about a desirable result, all my activity is still self-centered. Supposing I'm a plant. I can't, as a plant, say, or supposing I'm a bud, I can't say, "Well, now I'll become such and such a flower, and thereby do the perfect thing." I can't do it. It is life which does it. The thing that I don't know, does it? Similarly, with you and me, if you and I deliberately choose a set method, intellectually worked out method, and conform to that method, it will always be related to myself. That is why the ordinary systems of meditation as such have their drawbacks. They will take us thus far. But when they have taken us thus far, we wake up to the fact that this point to which I have arrived is in actuality no different from that point from which I started, because I am the same sort of self-centered person. Only this time, I don't want a chocolate or Coca-Cola or something. I want God. But it is I want, and that is the thing which spoils. And that is the thing which completely destroys the true meaning of meditation. Because the true meaning of meditation is not just musing in thought, the stream of thought. The stream of thought becomes completely silent and so still that the waters which flow past of the stream of thought are utterly transparent. You can't see them. And instead, a new awareness wakes up. A new awareness in which it is not you who are conscious of anything in the sense that I am conscious of this. But it is this transcendent reality, God, Brahman, use what word you like, which has come to full fruition through you, the individual, as the perfected human. And that's the marvel of it. In all the religions of the world, you'll find this. The work is ours. We sow. We toil. It is God who reaps. And God is the totality, the omnipresent, the omnipotent. That totality is here right now. How can I go seeking God there? God is here also. If I can't see God here and I have this restlessness which drives me to run there to seek God, well, of course, I'm blind. That's why I'm doing that. Now, these are the things we don't quite appreciate. So, with this question of meditation, which means actually being continuously in the state of communion, whatever one is doing, whether one is in one's office doing one's business, or whether one is cooking at home, or whatever one is doing, you see, God is here. The totality is here. The reality is here now. And it is here and now which is the living moment. This living creative moment. And if we are really in tune with that, then there is nothing to seek. Nothing to hold oneself back, so to say. One is the living vehicle, the living instrument for transcendence to show itself. In Christian language, the Son of Man is indeed the Son of God. To use the language of the Hindus, the Manushya Putra. Putra means son, Manushya man. The Manushya Putra is the Brahma Putra. Now, this perhaps is slightly different approach to the meaning, the significance of meditation. There is no small personal purpose involved in it. But it is part of the supreme process. Part of the supreme process. And the supreme process of the whole universe is one which displays continuous communion. It is only man who has the power to say no and get out of communion. Your tiger or your lion can't get out of communion. Your mosquito, your elephant, your oak tree, your wheat which is growing, the earth which is rotating and revolving, the stars and the galaxies, they can't get out of communion. The atoms and the subatomic particles that there are, they all make up this cosmos. And they are all in communion because they have no option to say no to the law inherent in their own being. It's only you and I who have that extraordinary power, because something new is evolving out of us. And because the human race is very young yet, how much? We are only 3 or 4 million years old, and that's very little. We may have as many as 2,000 million years yet to come as the human race. So this marvelous something which lies within us is slowly trying to emerge out of us, is slowly emerging. And it is our business this time not to leave everything to nature, because nature won't do any more. She has done everything that is necessary. It is now our individual personal responsibility that we shall see this vision, and we shall let this vision, this understanding, just grow by itself, not try to grasp it, because you can't grasp a vision. Vision means that you are actually seeing in the immediate living moment. If you don't see in the actual living immediate moment, whatever you hear, whatever you read, is something dead. It's not alive. And it doesn't have the effect from within you which the living vision of the moment has. It is only when you look out of this window and you see the marvelous beauty of the mountains, it is in that moment, that living vision, which affects you and opens up your inner being. Merely reading about it, or somebody else telling you, oh, in Elmau there are wonderful mountains to see, won't have that effect on you, will it? But when your own living eyes see, and your mind and heart completely open out to it, then it has happened. It is happening right now. Now, there are perhaps, with respect to this question of allowing communion to emerge out of ourselves, not trying to seek it, not trying to make it, because you and I can't make it. First, let me explain why you and I can't make it. Well, I won't say you, perhaps you can. But I am an ordinary human being. Just an ordinary, simple human being, like anybody else, you see. I am self-conscious. My mind gets preoccupied with myself. So I can't say, oh, I'm preoccupied with myself, I must go and get communion, or get into communion. Can't be done. It is the total reality which displays communion through me when I have deliberately stopped obstructing the communion. This is the point. Supposing this room had lots of bits of paper and waste paper thrown about, and litter and dust and mud from outside. Now, you can't take a bottle of cleanness and sprinkle it around and expect the room to be clean. Now, some of you have heard this 100 times already, so please bear with it. You can't sprinkle cleanness. What you do is to remove the dirt, and the room is clean. What is it in me that obstructs communion? If I really see that, really see it completely and totally, it vanishes by the act of seeing. And this person is in communion, in the state of communion, which is quite different from striving to put yourself into communion. Now, there are certain aspects to this business of communion. We, as living organisms, sometimes are seated quietly in a room like we are now. At other times, we are active, we are moving about, and so forth. Especially those of us who live in cities and are subjected to the noise and the bustle of the city and estate, which we may quite naturally say is the very opposite of communion. How are we to be and to live in such a way that this communion is not lost but is present in us in spite of all the noise and the disturbance around us? Obviously, we can't jump to the last stage immediately. We have to experience this kind of being in communion, out taking advantage of beautiful surroundings like we have here. That is why I have suggested that in the mornings we shall go out walking together. We'll keep close together. Now, the important point to remember is just this, that as we walk out, we shall use our eyes and ears, we'll see what there is to see, hear what there is to hear, and we will not interfere with that seeing and that hearing. You might wonder, what do I mean by interfering with that seeing and that hearing? Supposing I look at a tree. I see the color of the leaves and so forth. What is my brain doing the moment I look at that tree? It's describing the whole tree. It is talking fiercely all the time. Oh, autumn is much earlier this year. What a pity. All the leaves are gone and this, that and the other and so forth. Or this tree doesn't look at all healthy. I don't like the look of it. Or that's a fine tree and so on and so on. This is how I am a nuisance to the universe. You see? When I shut up, the king speaks, God speaks. And for the first time, I understand that transcendent language because it is a language without words, without thoughts, without reactions. It's not talking back at the omnipresence, at the actual reality of communion which is present throughout the universe. It's not talking back at it. And in not talking back, I am not jamming the stream of life, being an obstruction in the path of the way of life. That quietens quietens down me, the person. And in that state of quietness, there is real quietness. So, we will now go from this room together and we'll take a little walk together. Perhaps I might say a few words here and there as we walk. But what you have to practice is just to use your sense of sight, your sense of hearing, your sense of touch, the feel of the earth, and so forth as you walk, the feel of the wind as it blows, the light of the sun, the movement of the clouds. Just feel it. Just be sensitive to it and leave it at that. Don't talk back at it. This is the important thing. You see? So we'll stop at this moment and we'll gather outside downstairs at the front entrance. To start with, let us remember our own bodies are made up of atoms of various chemical substances. And these atoms are just electrical energies, actually. And just as our bodies are made up of these electrical energies, everything else that is visible in the universe is also made up of the same energies. There is only one matter, one substance throughout the universe, one energy, which has become you and me and the tree and the stone and everything. So there is this effectual unity to start with. But how do we think of, oh, that's a tree, this is a man? But we are unconscious that the tree and the man, the body of the tree, the body of a man, is the same thing. This fundamental energy, that is all. Now, it's the same with the mind. There is only one universal mind. We say, my mind, your mind, his mind, and all the rest of it. But we forget that there is only one mind similarly throughout the universe. But that mind, interacting with this one body of the universe in its various forms, gives rise to different mental and emotional processes. There is variety, in other words. And we notice the variety and we forget the unity. That is to say, we get out of communion. You know how we say, oh, that person, no, I don't like him. He has this quality, he has that quality. His mind works this way, his mind works this way. I can't get on with him. I'm out of communion straight away. There is only variety. Some of it seems to us evil, some of it seems to us good. But if we look into ourselves carefully, what we call evil is what we don't like. It is unpleasant to us. What we call good is what we like, what is pleasant to us. But that is a superficial difference. It can hurt, of course. But it's a superficial difference. The inner reality is one and the same. And it is that to which we have to wake up. When we are really sensitive to that, then you can be... You will never quarrel or fight with anybody. You won't oppose him. You'll be harmless. This is the important thing. So now let's feel, just sort of be sensitive to that unity throughout all this. And perhaps we'll start down this way as we go. And as I said, let the eyes see and the ears hear everything all the time. Quiet.
see the majesty of those mountains. Immense, strong. But that majesty and that immensity and that strength is in our minds. If our minds cannot respond to majesty or immensity, we wouldn't see majesty and immensity there. You see? You know how in the Old Testament it is said that Jehovah gets very angry with the Israelites for being disobedient. But although he gets angry, he always makes a new covenant, a new agreement with the Israelites. Always. It is he who takes the first step. Who is this Jehovah, the Lord, who takes the first step? It's the lordliness in you, in me. Who does the forgiving? Not I. The human who makes a mistake, it's the Lord who does the forgiving. Jesus never says, I forgive you. He says, you have repented, completely repented, then your sins are forgiven you. The forgiver is the Lord, the totality, the absolute. See the significance? So our minds reflect all these things. There's a sense of majesty, immensity, that is in here too. So when difficulties come, troubles come, how easily we forget that majesty in us. We are no longer like the king on his throne, but the frightened man running away. But if we are sensitive to this, that majesty and that immensity remains a continuous power under all circumstances. When we get really sensitive to everything, we never feel that that is ours. So long as we feel anything is ours, that and oneself are separate. We are not in communion. When you have blended milk and water together, you can't separate them again. We have to blend into this like milk and water. Then they are never separated again. It's a state of continuous communion. And we don't know it. The water doesn't know it is part of the milk now. The milk doesn't know it's with the water. So you see, if this sensitivity grows sufficiently strong, then in the middle of suffering and sorrow, and there are so many things in life which are terrible, which are sorrowful, in the middle of it all, we are so in communion with it that all the time there is only a healing process going on. evil has vanished. Because I have ceased to be evil. I have stopped being evil. Therefore evil vanishes. What takes its place? It doesn't mean that the sorrow and suffering of the world isn't there. It's there. But when the evil vanishes out of me, instead of my being merely upset or critical or feeling resentment against the evil, there is only compassion. There is only love. There is only understanding. Remember those words of Jesus, his last words almost, before he was crucified. Love one another as I have loved you. How did he love? Like you and I love? How did he love? Remember the words of the Buddha. When he taught his disciples, even if thieves were to carve you limb from limb with a double-handled saw, even then, if you should feel enmity towards them, you are not doers of my teaching. You don't live the teaching. So it's not enough to have ideas like this. They may be sublime, they may be very exalted, they may be what we call noble emotions, fine feelings and so forth. But they have to become a natural reality with us in the same way as what we call majesty and immensity are natural realities demonstrated through the great mountains and their beauty. So you see, that which is the shape of the transcendent shows itself in you yourself. You are that immensity, that power, that beauty, that goodness. That is what you actually are. When you awaken to it, you don't come to know it possessively. This is the important point. Oh, I am all this. Because the moment you say, I am this, that, or the other, you have separated yourself. You are out of communion with totality. This is the important point. And you see, this sort of communion with nature, this bodily communion with nature, can bring all this about. We are fortunate today in having such a lovely day because the circumstance is easier. It's as if you were good pianists and you had a lovely Steinway, grand and beautiful condition to play. But you may have just a tin kettle of a piano to play. But if you are a great artist, it's marvelous what you will produce out of that tin kettle of a piano. It's simply fantastic. You won't believe that it's such a rotten piano, really, under the great artist. We talked a bit about our selectiveness in life. We like this, we want it, we shall keep it, we shall look after it. We don't like this, we push it aside. Look at this tree. Look at all this. And all that also. And look at the other trees. And the different stages at which they are. So you see, life is a whole. Everything is there together all the time. Birth, growth, decay, disease, health, death, pain, destruction, evil, horror, marvel, beauty, everything is there at once. And this whole universe is the body of the transcendent. And this body of the transcendent is no different from the mind of the transcendent. You know, you find in all the religions, all the original texts, if you look at them carefully, they always talk in terms of, I'll use the Christian phraseology because naturally you'll know that more intimately than other phraseologies, probably. And God said, and God made this, that, and the other. But what is the meaning of that? Where does the material come from? There is no material. It is the mind, if you like, of God. Supposing you said, and God minded, let there be this. And it immediately is. What does it mean? We can produce an intellectual formula for it. This vast energy, this primordial energy right from the beginning, if it constricts itself in a certain way, a particular form will come. If it constricts itself in another way, another kind of form will come. And so the countless millions of forms emerge that way. Out of the one ultimate real, and the one ultimate real becomes the many which are changing. The intellect will naturally ask questions about mortality and immortality. The ultimate real, the totality, is always totality. It's neither more nor less. Isn't it? It always remains the same totality. It is the all, the absolute all. But you and I, constituted as we are, see things as separate. We are not conscious in this sort of universal manner. We haven't got cosmic consciousness normally. So we see things only separately. And we say, oh, but that is dying. And oh, this is on the way to death. Oh, this is coming to life. And so forth. We make these differences because we haven't got the sensitivity to totality. That's one of the sources of our troubles in the world and in all our activities. Now the totality, the separate finite things, the limited things, the things you can measure in time and space, they are the things which seem to us to come to be born, to grow, to die. But you see, everything happens. Every different kind of phenomenon is present simultaneously. Look at all these. Look at that grass. And look at the green grass. And when one sees it, hear that crackle? This is not the elasticity, the vigor, the spring of youth, of life. This is the crackle of death. Isn't it? But it is there. Everything together. Together with the spring and the elasticity of life. And when we can really feel that, we allow it to be. We don't say, oh, this is not good, I should get rid of it. Then, again, there is compassion and understanding. You don't have to carry out a systematic method. Now I must develop compassion in my mind. I must develop understanding in my mind. You can't do it that way. You grow naturally. Did you or I control our growth from the time the body was born? We couldn't. We know nothing about it. We know nothing about the ways of life. At this moment today, none of us can control our digestion or anything. It just goes on by itself. And the bloodstream just goes on. And everything just happens. You and I can't do that. We can tamper with it and spoil it and harm ourselves. But that is as much as we can do. Occasionally patch up things. We can put in a plastic heart almost nowadays, can't we? It's like that. But if this sensitivity and this understanding that everything is together, and you accept it, you understand it, then whatever needs action receives the right action from. Then you act from within yourself. Then that's right action. You don't need to run to somebody else and say, oh, what should I do now? What should I do now? Just look. Just listen. Be sensitive. And in the quietness, the compassion and the understanding will work together. There is perhaps one of the deep secrets for producing harmony politically, economically, socially, and every other way. Otherwise not. How is that? We've, I think, had a good little time together. Mm-hmm. Now this is just an example of what you can do by yourselves. You can walking in twos or threes or alone by yourselves. Just be awake, alive to what is. And see that this doesn't keep chattering back at it all the time. That's the important thing. And then we'll meet in the afternoon. I will go back now to where we have to go.